Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. And guys, it's January of 2015 again because the crew is back together. Colin is producing us.
Whoa.
With me to talk about TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell.
Hello.
Winter, I did Gilmore Guys, and Kevin from Gilmore Guys said he had to stop himself from giving me a hello when greeting me.
Cool.
Journalist and novelist, touring novelist, Margaret Wappler.
Hi, Guy. Missed you.
It's good to be back. It's good to have you back. How was the tour, Margaret?
It was amazing. It was really fun. I'm about to go out in about a week to Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco.
Nice. Will there ever be indie movies about you slowly emotionally melting down on your book tour?
There might be. I mean, there was a rough moment on the floor of Penn Station.
Good.
Okay.
That's drama. And academic and DJ Oliver Wang.
Hello, Guy. How you been?
I'm doing good. A couple of late nights at work, man. I have been missing you guys, but it is good for all of us to be back together. Coming up on this week's show, finally, the VMAs have happened, and we must make the call. What is the summer jam of 2016? Plus, we'll each be sharing our recommendations for a podcast instead of jams this week. We'll be giving you our idea jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or event have caught our attention this week. Margaret Wappler, what are you all about this week?
I'm all about I Love Dick, which is a new pilot from Amazon Prime and from Jill Soloway, more importantly. She obviously did fantastic work with Transparent, and now she's lent her vision to I Love Dick, which is based on this feminist cult novel by Chris Krause. And if you haven't read the book, I highly, highly, highly recommend it because it's like this real beautiful marriage of a certain kind of like pop sensibility of like what it's like to be obsessed with someone, and then a lot of brilliant thinking about philosophy and relationships like under the surface of it all.
Who are we dealing with in this show?
Chris Krause's characters is played by Catherine Hahn, who is so great. And I feel like I've just been waiting for Catherine Hahn to take the front seat on something. I mean, she's been like the perfect side, like the wing chick in so many things.
Yeah.
She's so naturally hilarious. And then the object of her obsession is this like director of a, I think it's a literature program. I can't remember how it's portrayed in the show, but he's played by Kevin Bacon. And basically, And Kevin Bacon has this real kind of like, it takes place in Marfa, Texas, so he has this real kind of Texas swagger, like mixed in with the super intellectual New York cool. It's a very intoxicating combination for a certain kind of lady. And the other person I should mention in the pilot that you see is Chris Krause's partner, who is the person who got the fellowship to come to this literature department. And that is Griffin Dunn, which
I love him.
Who expected that? Like out of nowhere, there's Griffin.
Back. Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't remember him. Who is he?
He's Dominic Dunn's and Dominique Dunn's.
And he was like,
he's After Dunn Hours, son. Right? Like Scorsese. He's like the main character in After Hours.
He was like a young 20-something, but who had the veneer of like literati over him because he was Griffin Dunn's son. Dominic Dunn's son and Joan Didion's nephew or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds exciting.
Yeah. So you have to go and watch it, but then also vote on it.
It's a, how do you feel about Amazon's we show you the pilot, you tell us whether you want a TV show thing?
I like it if it plays out to my interests.
Right.
Oh, Margaret. That's 2016 as an election year in every way.
Exactly.
Winter, what are you all about this week?
I think the three of us are all about the VMAs.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just going to take a... the part I'm always interested in is, how well did the show do the next day?
Uh-huh.
So the first thing I did was emailed Matt Donnelly, one of my good friends from The Wrap, and said, when you get that memo from Viacom, please forward.
Yeah.
And the ratings are atrocious. Like 6.5 million tuned in. They had it on all the Viacom networks. So
yeah, I DVR'd it and I ended up getting it on Spike.
Yeah.
I got it on Centric.
I got it on VH1. So none of us watched MTV. There's one. Two, they also had it, I think it was live streamed. You can go to MTV.com and watch it. Listen, I...
Are you at all surprised that a show with such great performances but such terrible packaging tanked that hard?
No, I think that they have moved so far from being relevant to that subset, that demographic, that... And plus, people know stunts. They're being led up to stunts every moment of the year. So by the time you get to this sort of dead of the summer and in pop culture, everybody's busy doing stuff, going back to school. It's like, I need to know what I'm getting or I don't care. And they don't really start teasing things until about a week ahead of time. And then also artists don't do interviews anymore. They don't, you know, release music ahead of time. So there's not like anything really to tune in for. Plus, there's no celebrities other than the artists that are nominated.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird when it goes from like the greatest of the great are performing.
Yeah.
And then you've got that guy from Catfish and his girlfriend who's not wearing a shirt.
Exactly.
Oliver. What were your thoughts? What did you really grab hold of?
Well, I actually have a different thing I'm about, but I'm happy to talk about the VMAs because I did watch. I'm not sure I counted four great performances. I thought Rihanna was, at least half of them were good, but it took me a while to understand that she was being awarded some, you know, a lifetime achievement.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why do they keep bringing her back?
Because Beyonce told them
a
week ahead of time,
exactly.
I'm actually going to do 20 minutes.
And when Beyonce said, you know, they were teasing Beyonce's going to perform Lemonade, I'm thinking, that's an album. That's not a song. And I'm like, oh, you're going to do half the album.
Right.
And I just figured she'd do the whole thing.
I don't understand how in the same show you can have Key and Peele not hosting. So Key and Peele doing characters. Like the stack of terrible that this is, that they were doing characters, that they were not on the stage able to engage with and react to the audience.
Right.
That like when you're a stand-up comic who is sort of working or somebody working from their own identity, you have that sort of like mobility and you can react. They were up and away, not direct, not reacting. People were seeing them on a screen.
Yeah.
They weren't laughing. They weren't engaging.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't do anything to dynamically handle the fact that things weren't going well. And above and beyond all of it, the shtick was, like, ironically making fun of two social media-aware, like, millennials for an audience that has been chocked full of all of the too socially aware, like, you know, social media influencer millennials that they could grab hold of.
Right.
Like, a bunch of adorable kids in their best outfit and 60,000 followers on, like, Twitter and Snapchat and Instagram, like, going through this experience for them. And that disjuncture, like, the fact that no one in that audience was ready for comedy and certainly not comedy at their expense was creepy.
But then, like, Jay Farrow popping up doing his shtick that is really long. And I love him, but it's long.
Jay Farrow and Nicole Byer were at least doing what that audience needs and wants.
Sure.
He was doing impressions of people that they know. Nicole Byer was just giving you, like, fangirl life.
Which I loved her for.
And it was so much fun. Like, she should have had better, like, backup writing-wise because it really felt like it was just, like, her riffing and hitting points.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always so funny and she's always so likable. But, like, those were the few things I was able to grab hold of like, this is good.
Yeah. And DJ Khaled, I'm sorry to interrupt.
I know. I'm glad you brought him up because I was just about to.
Well, I don't know what your opinion's going to be on.
No, he didn't. He was just one of the many very bad co-hosts on the entire show.
Okay.
It was, but how do you have the same show that has
poor people,
that shitstorm, like that has Fallon coming out there and being the worst of what Jimmy Fallon could be,
right?
Yeah. And then also so perfectly choreographs Beyonce's 20 minutes of ongoing like Lemonade, such that you get the droplet of sweat or spittle on the camera. Like, and the thing is I, like, you know, I worked on the ones last year. Like, it is, they do come in with their own team. They do choreograph it. They have field marshals who are ready to make it go. And I don't understand why MTV can't wrap it up in a bow that is worthy of the work being done by these artists.
I just don't at this point understand the incentive of even watching the whole entire show as a regular traditional broadcast. I mean, I just watched the clips today.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me, too, that there was no, incendiary moment. There was no huge gaffe. There was no huge outrage or scandal or anything.
No soy bomb.
Yeah, there was just nothing. It just was like, Beyonce killed it. Good to know. We already knew that.
And like letting Kanye come out and talk for 10 minutes was stupid. But also last year you had him talking for 20 minutes.
Right.
Like it's just an anticlimax. And I think we have kind of lost the right amount of antagonism in a host. Like we no longer have that person who's able to come and love it but take the piss out of it. You either have what's his name, British guy at the Golden Globes,
Ricky Gervais
being an asshole, or people sort of like sucking up to it or doing lifeless things
but
that MTV
has approved.
But who would
you give that job to, guy? Like, who the fuck would do that? What happened last night?
I mean, I think that there are lots of talented and appropriate people out there who they aren't accessing in the right way. Fucking Nikki Glaser, like, you know, I think that there are a lot of really talented people, but that, you know, one of the problems with having these gigantic conglomerates that have 16 networks is that they end up having this uniform vision of what talent looks like.
Sure.
I don't know that they're necessarily fostering the kind of people. I mean, thank fucking God they found Nicole. Nicole's right now not necessarily the right person to be sort of like up there making that shit happen. Mm-hmm. But I think she or Jay Farrow would have done a better job than the Key and Peele situation. But none of us would have called that because we were fucking talking about how much we would love to see Key and Peele host the Oscars back during the Oscars.
Right.
Small nitpick, which is I didn't think, I mean, I thought last night's show was terrible for the most part. But it's funny to me to read people talking about how the VMAs have fallen off as if there was this golden era of halcyon VMAs.
Okay,
well, the Britney Spears Madonna kiss was,
but
I think, the golden era.
Those are moments. Those are not the show.
It's always been moments.
I mean, Madonna, like, there have been really, really great VMAs. And yes, they have mostly been about the performances. But that's all right. I feel like all a host needs to do is kind of hold the performances together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, James Corden did a fine job last year. He didn't do amazing work. We didn't talk about him.
Wait, he hosted it
last
year? Yeah. Well, the fact that you don't remember, I think says something.
Yeah.
But
I think it speaks highly of it. It means that it did not go poorly.
That's true.
And he did his job.
We will remember that Key and Peele did this for all the wrong reasons.
It's so sad.
I think it's a real testament to how boring the show was that, like, the fact that a beautiful woman, a.k.a. Alicia Keys, wasn't wearing makeup was, like, a big story.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't have eyeliner on or anything.
that's been a story because she's been on The Voice saying that I'm not going to wear makeup anymore. Because,
no, I know. I mean, I'm saying I think it's awesome that she's doing it. I love it. I think it exposes interesting things about female pageantry and how dependent we are to like see that. I mean, because I looked at her and thought she's beautiful. At the same time, I'm like, where's the makeup?
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I think it's an interesting kind of punk stunt to do as a public figure.
Go ahead.
It is, but I do like reserving that as like that is the place for that artistry, and like there's also something powerful to
but
that.
But why
point.
Are we so attached to it when men show up all the time with no makeup?
Look, I fucking hate that men show up being boring, and I do think that it's important that Alicia Keys shows up and says, "I don't have to do this. When we do it, it is art. It is not my obligation."
Right,
Oliver. What are you all about this week?
So first of all, shout out to Amanda and Kevin who collectively invited all of us on Pop Rocket to their upcoming nuptials.
I mean, wow.
Which is awesome.
I'm
honored. Of course, it's in 2 months in Georgia, so that's probably going to be a no from me. No, I mean, no disrespect, but I really do appreciate it. That's
I'm
going to
see.
Fantastic.
I have family in Georgia.
By the way, I'm going to see too. In Wappler, we can turn it up.
Oh, it's
yes,
really tempting.
Yes.
It's really
Hot
tempting.
Hotlanta, baby.
Hotlanta.
I mean, I'm slightly insulted I didn't get asked to DJ it, but, you know, it's never too late, I guess.
But there's just something. So we come and we do this thing. We have a better situation than everybody else's podcast because we do get to come and have like a round table where we have a conversation that we all very much enjoy.
Right.
And the notion that other people listen to it always feels kind of remote and wonderful.
Yes. Like what is wrong with you that you enjoy this so much?
Yes. But it is just so lovely when you find out that people listen to this show and enjoy it. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
That's so kind.
No, it's,
and don't count me out. I don't know about Wang over here, but I'm in it.
But what is your...
The Night Of, which just finished on HBO last night,
yeah.
Or 2 nights ago by the time this year, 3 nights ago, whatever. It finished this past week. Am I the only one of us four, of our four to have watched it?
I want to watch it. I haven't seen it yet.
So I thought it was good. I might even say very good. I don't think it was great by the standards that HBO has put out. And I do think that it's sort of interesting to think that at this point, we are so used to the perfected mise-en-scene of any prestige cable drama that you just know every shot is going to be lovingly composed within an inch of its life, that we can sort of take for granted that everything's going to look amazing. The editing is probably going to be very competent. But then you start really focusing on, so, all right, we got that taken care of. What about the story and the characters? And I think that The Night Of, as much as it lured me in initially, the more it went on, again, I liked it. I just felt like it missed a lot of opportunities to do more with what it was trying to do, which was to be a legal procedural that didn't want to do all the familiar beats of a legal procedural, but in the end still succumbs to a lot of those beats. You know, it definitely has a little bit of Oz. It has a little bit of The Wire. It has a little bit of True Detective. It has a very graphic infomercial about the importance of skincare. You know?
Was there too much eczema? The thing I've heard, the dominant talk I've heard is there's too much eczema.
Eczema is a main theme of it?
Well, so John Turturro plays a subway lawyer, and he has a case of eczema, and that factors into a lot of the... Just a lot. If a lot of the series is about him struggling with eczema.
That's an interesting angle.
It is. And I love Turturro. It was really fun to see him. I feel like the series bent too much towards him and along the way completely tossed the South Asian co-attorney under the bus in order to make room for him to be in there. The black characters
A narrative in American television dismissed a brown person to focus on a white person. Yes. That doesn't seem reasonable, Oliver.
I know. But that's the thing. I mean, this show sort of wants to not be another Law and Order remake, and it takes pains in some directions, but then it just comes back to this very familiar center. So I don't know. I give it like a solid B, and it was better than True Detective season 2, which I guess doesn't say much, but
that's faint praise.
But I'm still waiting for something that just really knocks it out of the park. And I did not see the Oscar Isaac Show Me a Hero, which everyone says was great.
So good.
So I probably need to go back and watch that again.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like I should watch it. I feel like it's for me. You guys, we are at those darkest days. We are at the point where all of our stores have run out. And we are waiting for the new harvest of television to come and save us from entertainment starvation.
We need that strong harvest moon of October.
Yeah, let's all pray for rain. All right, we're going to be right back after this to select a summer jam.
Oh, my gosh.
Hello, and welcome to Podphone. What type of podcast are you looking for?
You have chosen funny podcasts about bad movies.
Rated R. May we recommend The Flophouse?
Three friends talk about bad movies and make each other and you laugh.
Rated R. The Flophouse is playing at your ears.
If you download it right now or whenever.
Rated R. To purchase tickets to The Flophouse. You don't need to do that. Just download it. The Flophouse. Rated R. For nudity, I guess.
Hello, and welcome back to Pop Rocket. Absolutely every summer, I force my three friends to go through the excruciating process of helping me, pop music-obsessed Guy Branum, decide what my summer jam should be. We've gone through a lot of stuff. We've narrowed it down to a list of the real contenders, and we now have to ask ourselves, can any of these truly claim to be summer jam, or, I'm going to lay this out here as a possibility, is this a summer without a jam?
Jamless summer.
I know, it's devastating. Margaret.
Yes.
We're going to lay out a benchmark. We're going to lay out a benchmark with the song that wanted so much to be the summer jam. I'm, of course, talking about Justin Timberlake's
Yes.
Can't Stop the Feeling. Let's hear it.
Grabbing at you with his knee.
Margaret, what has it got going for it? What are its limitations?
It's light, it's fluffy, it's dancey, it's Justin Timberlake in his total supreme comfort spot. The thing that I feel like with this song is that it's just boring to give Justin Timberlake the summer jam. It's almost like when we reelected Jerry Brown, you know, as governor of California. It was like, yeah, just give the job back to him.
Fuck no. Jerry Brown coming back is Cher showing up in 1998 with Believe saying, I've still got amazing inside of me. This was a dude showing up thinking he could keep, like, Oliver, back me up here. Like, this song is a cheap ripoff of Happy.
Yes. It's perfectly fine, but the fact is, and we were talking about this before we started taping, Guy, that Happy felt irresistible. Like, even if you didn't love the song, there was something about its energy that just dragged you along with it. This is sort of Justin saying, hey, look, I can kind of do the same thing. Why don't you enjoy this too? And it just feels too obvious that this is what he's doing.
That it's attached to an animated movie, that it, like, yep. The thing is, Happy always on a dance floor made me do things that I wasn't used to doing on a dance floor. It had a little bit extra energy. It was, it felt conspiratorial in a way that I really like.
The packaging of it was a little bit cooler too. Like that video that he made of, yes, all the people dancing on the street that was super, super long. I mean, that was just like an interesting thing to launch out there along with your summer jam. And I feel like Timberlake, it's just like, yeah, it's with an animated movie. It's like utterly predictable.
And it was like, I would say in its favor, this is something that like a wedding band can definitely wrap itself around. But it was also like, there's also something kind of terrible and trite about that. Winter, any thoughts on this sad, mediocre song?
You know, when it came out,
You've turned on it so fast. So quickly.
It's a good song. I will always love this song.
Yeah, I will always love the song. And when it, and only recently, after having it on my playlist for the summer, I have my own personal playlist that I like to curate. Only in the last, since I put it in like 3 months ago, have I just skipped it. You know? Like, yeah. it didn't wear itself out as quickly as it could have. But I also, there are songs of the summer that I've listened to continuously since they've been released.
Did it make the Make the Baby playlist?
No. Hell no.
Winter.
No babies made or attempted.
Nah, zero.
pitch something
negative
to
babies.
Pitch a song to you that I'm feeling. You know, I got to be honest with you. I'm really feeling Britney's album, and it's giving me Blackout vibes. Blackout was her album of the summer while she was in the midst of a mental breakdown. And Do You Want to Come Over is my new-ish favorite song. Like, I can jam to it. I'm trying to invest something into her because she's making such a huge effort to just get in there and stick with it. Because of your mattress, do you want to come over?
Yeah. Do you want to come over? This sounds like a Neptunes track. Is this a Neptunes track?
It could be.
Look, it's good. It's definitely good. But I feel like this summer has been glutted with club songs that are not necessarily...
This is thumpy. Like, if you're at the club, Guy, and this comes on and it's sped up just like an oomph, and it was loud,
honestly,
there.
This is the first time I'm hearing this, and it's
you had two greyhounds. You are feeling the...
I'm not drinking something with carbs, if you've seen me.
A skinny margarita, then.
A skinny margarita.
I mean, this is very good, but I'm not hearing it until just now.
Right, right.
But it does sort of have that urgency where I feel like a lot of this summer has been pop queens of yore showing up with something that was just a little bit sluggish.
Can I bag on Britney, or do you need to brag on
Britney?
No, go for it.
You go.
I just can't. I wish we would just stop trying to make her happen again. I know, I'm sorry, Winter, after you just got said you love this, but like, her voice to me just sounds like a bag of Skittles singing. Like, if a Skittle could sing, this is what it would sound like.
Margaret, I had a very...
Like, I have reverse ASMR to this voice. it untangles my brain.
She was someone... She was sort of the first pop princess that I dismissed as, I am so uninterested with what's going on, until Toxic came.
Yeah.
I know, I love Toxic. Yes. But that's it to me. That's, like, on the mountain, and then everything
like
else
ago.
Is way down.
Yes. Speaking of asthma... let's go to the track that literally, like, I have the most reaction to of this summer.
Uh-oh.
I do not know that it is a summer track.
Okay.
It is Hold Up by the queen.
All right, let's do this.
They don't love you like I love you. Slow down, they don't love you like I love you. Back up, they don't love you like I love you. Step down, they don't love you like I love you.
Margaret is giving us a baseball bat swing.
Yes.
So this song was the jammiest song on an album without jams that was not giving America what we wanted, but what we needed. And, like, it's one of the, like, it is a fun and interesting creation of a moment on a dance floor, but I don't know one that I will see that much because it is such a specific and different song. It, like, it is a moody song. It is a listening song. And I feel in many ways it doesn't fit the character of a summer jam.
I would think if you had to pull something off of Lemonade, Sorry is probably the better choice for that. I mean, I love Hold Up. Don't get me wrong. Uh-huh. I think I can listen to this forever. But Sorry to me, even though I don't think it was not in the air enough to sort of ascend to summer jam status, but that's the most summer jammy song off of Lemonade.
I mean, it's the problem of this being an album. Like, an album in the way that we don't get so much of anymore.
Yeah.
Where it was a series of experiences to be held together.
Right.
With Somali poetry in between.
Right.
Somali American poetry.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you, Oliver, that Sorry, to me, had something a little more tantalizing in a summer sense. It also felt like one of those songs that you put on, like, Quadrant mentioned.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like, you're putting on your makeup, you're getting ready to go out, and it, like, just gives you that electric feeling.
Well, see, I feel,
like,
that way about Don't Hurt Yourself.
Tonight. Yeah.
Right. Don't Which I think could vie in the same
yeah.
sphere, sure.
Yeah.
I ain't sorry.
But you can also sing along with it, which I think is vital for a summer jam.
Yes.
Oh.
I mean, it's got a great hook, you know?
That is a great argument, Oliver, yes. Because, of course, an important part of a summer jam is something that you can play, like, with the top down as you are cruising along with the Pacific breeze in your face. And this gives you a lot of that, but it's like, it's not dancey. It is transcendent in a different way.
That's the whole album to me. That's why I couldn't connect this at all to summer.
Yeah.
It just felt so in its own era.
It's almost like just a touch too cerebral to be summer.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. It's also, I mean, this is the work of a woman who's 35 and has a kid and is in a different place than just sort of like summer fun. And that's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, it's her birthday this week.
But also 9481 BJ. All right.
There we go.
To the subject of summer, let us go with a song that is connected to summer in all of the ways we need, except for one. Let's listen to Cake by the Ocean.
Okay.
For what it's worth, special correspondent Ella Mazzotta Wang really likes this song. So maybe an 11-year-old's opinion helps to push this up the summer jam ranks.
No. Like, no.
That factor, the fact that they walked home with the best new artist, VMA last night, for somebody who's been around for a while, I think speaks interestingly to the nature of this song. But it, like, staring this song down, it is what I want in a summer jam. It is something you can play on your car, something you can play while you're dancing at a party at the beach. It's all of those things. It also has a sexy, conspiratorial feel. Like, the little narrative of this guy hitting on this girl while the whole time sort of understanding the guy you're with is better than me, but you should get with me, is, like, part of the scrappy summertime, like, attitude, like, very teenage attitude. There was something, like, I really connected to in Cool for the Summer last summer. Like, it really was like, oh, God, this is evocative.
It tells a story.
It tells a story, and it tells a story that, like, takes you back to, you know, Carly Rae Jepsen. Let's listen to Call Me Maybe.
Oh, boy.
Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number, so call me maybe.
That's a motherfucking summer jam right there, all right?
Yes.
And when Cake doesn't have that.
When she says hot night, Margaret Wappler, you know that she fucking means a lake in the Midwest.
That is right.
You fucking know that
Blunted
she's...
Blunted in naked, baby.
Out there with boys, and she's hitting on somebody, and she believes in herself. And, like, I want the song to give me some taste of that, and I really feel like Cake by the Ocean like manages to summon that energy. And look, I saw DNCE at Toronto Pride. They were underwhelming. I loved the song less after watching the way that they just sort of like stomped through that song.
Yeah, but they're babies still. You know what I mean?
Last night, did you see them on VMAs last night?
No, but I bet they couldn't hang quite yet.
Hell no.
No. I mean, that happens with these new bands that just come out with the summer hit. But you know what I like about that song? I do think it's well constructed. It reminds me of like an OK Go song, like dipped in a lot of glitter.
Okay. The point that it came out in September of last year, does it completely knock it out of the running?
Oh, September last year?
September last year.
Has it been charting lately?
It has been charting throughout the summer. Like, it's, when I was going through, it was like charting around like 20 for all of the summer. But
I mean,
it was,
sometimes a song has a slow burn, especially from the new kids on the block, you know?
Hey, mathematically, we should be saying that the song of the summer is Panda by what's his name?
Designer.
Let's listen to it.
I got broads in Atlanta, just to be in the family. Credit cards in the scammers, hitting the licks in the van. Legacies, family, waiting to see them like a panda. Going out like a Montana, honey killers on the helmets. Legacies, family, waiting to see.
I hate this and want nothing to do with it.
Well, wait, I thought you liked it.
Will anyone defend the place of this in summer 2016?
I'm only going to defend it because it just came, it literally came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And the way that it was made, I heard an NPR story about how the beat was $20. A kid made it after having a bad day at work in Britain. And then this guy goes and gets the song in New York and puts his beats over it. And then what ends up happening is that Kanye makes a remix of the song before the song goes viral. And that made that actually made the song more popular. So for him, this and this alone, because what he needs to understand is he's watching his one-hit wonderment in real time. He will never make another song.
Where's Omi? Where's Omi this summer?
Where is Omi this summer?
He can stay away.
Yes.
Can you articulate what about it you hate apart from everything? Like, what about it does this doesn't work for you?
Is the way he says panda a lot?
Panda.
I like that it is driving. I think it is doing good work by being a song that is driving, and I think that it separates it from many of the things I would call club songs, and does make it something that is sort of visceral. It is, to me, not fun. Mm-mm. Like, to me, like, I realize that to some people, I'm going to call them straight guys. this repetition of a stupid word is fun, but it is not fun to me. Like, I can see the car where this is beating and thumping and people are going along with it. But it is like, they're not people who are looking to have wind blow through their hair. Oliver.
Yes.
Do you have a song you want to pitch? Do you have a song that you think that you believe in?
I have a song that I like. I don't think that it really is in the running just in terms of being being huge during the summer, especially because it was a song that really I think had its peak in the spring. But then again, I didn't realize that the Cake, you know, or Cake came out a year ago, basically, which would be Adele's "Send My Love." A few things that this song has going for it. Number one, it's Adele, and unlike a lot of the other songs that we heard, I genuinely love listening to her voice. Whereas I might tolerate listening to someone like a Carly Rae Jepsen because everything else around that song was so good, it didn't matter that she wasn't technically amazing. But Adele's voice just has that character to it, which makes it genuinely pleasurable. And this song does something very similar to what I think Lorde did with Royals, which is, it is a very slow burn during the main verse, and then things kick up a notch in the chorus, where, in this case, again, Adele is doing all these verbal gymnastics with how she's inflecting her voice, and there's something incredibly infectious about it. You want to sing along, even though no one can sing along properly because it's going to be a mess trying to beat Adele. But for all those reasons,
and
I really love.
Therein lies your problem, my friends.
Because we can't nail the Adele-isms of it?
I would say it needs to be a little bit more accessible.
Yeah, I feel like Adele is almost like genetically unable to make a summer jam. Like she can make a like driving to your parents on Thanksgiving jam. Like she just doesn't have like that summer like fire danger element.
There's too much wisdom.
Yes. She's almost like above it. She's
like
too good for it.
For reading and being inside and knitting.
That's her summer.
In ways, her poppiest song is a You Broke My Heart, You Asshole song.
Right. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, of course, her voice is, like, amazing. And you can listen to her, like, read a phone book or sing a phone book. But
the thing is, for me, though, that my favorite summer songs are really songs that, to me, capture the end of the season. And so there's always going to be a little bit of melancholy, a little bit bittersweet. And even though the song came out in the spring, it delivers all of those things. But the sort of height of summer jam that I think a lot of people gravitate to, I don't always, that doesn't always speak to my particular desire.
Look, Oliver, when you lead a life where you know you're going to reproduce and that seasons end and seasons begin, that's all fine. But when all you've got is now, you're going for the height of summer.
I feel that.
You're like at the long end of the beach day when like the sand is in your sunscreen and you're like, get me off of here.
It's why I like that Frank Ocean album so much because that is an end of summer album.
Exactly.
Margaret.
Yes.
This Is What You Came For, I feel like, is one of the true contenders. Why do you like this song?
I will stand up for the Rihanna Calvin Harris collaboration because I feel like those two just know how to put together a goddamn summer jam. I mean, we've had many from, or at least a couple good contenders from them in the past. And I think this song, although I think it starts out a little too slow, it does eventually build to something.
It's the fucking problem of this summer. If everyone making you sit through like 45 minutes of boredom before you get to the motherfucking song. Everyone fucking did that, and half of the time the song was still too slow after that. But this is one of the ones that I fell in love with.
And everybody's watching her, but she's looking at you.
We can just end the show now. This is the fucking shit.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is the kind of chorus that a summer jam is built on, where, like, this thing is going to get stuck in your mind like gum, and you're not going to be able to get rid of it.
And then
this part. Yes. Like, this is where you really get, like,
Calvin
the
Harris
slam.
Doing his thing.
Bring that up. Colin, bring it up.
Yeah, it's a wrap.
It's a wrap.
Shh,
don't. Also,
guys, we at least have to see the other debutantes at the ball. Do you know what I mean?
No, but can I say something really fast? When I just forgot that I saw her sing this at Coachella, and she has fun singing it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, the wonderful thing about Rihanna is that in maintaining her distance,
you
know that she's always got a life that's her own.
Exactly.
Unfortunately for you guys listening at home, Winter and I get each other, so not everything needs to be said. All right. One last song that is sort of wonderful, came at the end of the summer, and now is like at the top of the Billboard Hot 100, is Cheap Thrills by Sia. Let's get a little bit of this. What I will say for this song over the Beyonce song. This is a song that hits the pelvis. Like, this is a song that really, like, gets you moving from the deepest parts of yourself. And I feel like I want both lightness and sexiness at the same time from a summer jam. And it's so appealing. And I feel like I like this song so much now, and Sia songs just grow on me so hard over time that I wonder how I will feel about this a year from now.
Right.
I think it's got this great combination of being slinky and tropical.
Yeah.
And then the fact that there's that, like, kid chorus being shouted in the background, which could be such a hokey thing, it actually really, really works in the song.
All right, Oliver, we need to go to a higher authority. Do you have one of your fancy friends who knows about music, who we can talk to?
Yes. This has been a long time coming, but really excited to bring on Chris Melanfi. I should introduce him properly as a chart analyst and pop critic for both Slate and Pitchfork. And he's also one of the people who not only reports on charts, but actually understands the crazy Byzantine mathematics and logic that go into how something ends up charting. And one of the things that he writes about is anytime a song hits number one on the Billboard charts, he basically does a dissection explaining how did it get there. And so he's written, I think, at least the last three or four summers, he has had a song of the summer analysis to figure out, all right, based on what we saw on the charts, what was the song of the summer? And he can help us maybe clear up if there is, mathematically speaking, something that wins that particular award.
Hello, Chris. I'm Guy Branum with Pop Rocket. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Margaret Wappler. Hi, and, Chris.
Hey.
And Oliver Wang. Hey, how's it going, Chris?
Great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Chris, we need some guidance. We're trying to determine what my summer jam is. This is a nexus between what the universe is directing towards me and my own personal tastes. Will you be my higher power when it comes to this?
I'll do my best, Guy. Didn't you post Cake by the Ocean right at the start of the summer?
Yes.
Or have you already moved on from that?
I don't know that I can move on from it, Chris. It's giving me everything aesthetically that I want from a song of the summer. You must understand my Aristotelian ideal of a song of the summer is Katy Perry's California Girls. That's what I want it to be. And this song was so beautiful, with the exception of, you know, Fat Jew being in it and the fact that it came out last autumn. Is it a viable contender?
I think it's a viable contender insofar as it hung around all summer. I mean, you know, they were all over the VMAs the other night. And I don't know, I've kind of viewed this summer partially as a Jonas v. Jonas competition because, you know, the two brothers were basically like, you know, haggling it out on the Hot 100. I mean, you also had Nick Jonas with his latest single, Close, which sounded completely different and more sultry. But the two of them were kind of like, you know, duking it out at various times.
Chris,
so,
you're one of Oliver's fancy music friends. You're not supposed to be endorsing me in this, my frivolous pursuit. You're not supposed
okay,
to say
Guy,
this is okay.
You're wrong.
Okay.
It's impossible for this song to be Song of the Summer because, yes, it peaked in, like, April. But I don't know. I mean, it's definitely summery. It's a summer jam. I don't know. I mean, there's a long history of songs that sound summery that peaked at the wrong time of year. I mean, do you know that, like, The Boys of Summer by Don Henley was a hit in, like, January?
I mean, not a dad, so I don't know things about Don Henley.
So, like, you know, like, songs that have summer in the title don't always peak in you know, the perfect moment. But go
what
on.
What is the song of the summer?
I mean, do you want me to tell you officially
yes.
based on
Ooh,
data?
That's why we have you on,
data,
baby.
Data.
Tell us.
Crunch those numbers.
All right. No, well, it's the answer this year, and Oliver knows this, is it's quite boring. I mean, the song of the summer is Drake's One Dance, and it has been every week since the summer began.
Unbelievable. It
was number one for something like 9 or 10 weeks. It was just, you know, streaming everywhere, booming out of cars everywhere. Billboard does this chart that they call the Summer Songs Chart, where all they do is, starting Memorial Day, they start accumulating all the Hot 100 data week by week, and, you know, you kind of follow it like a horse race, and then by Labor Day, they determine what the Song of the Summer is. And believe it or not, last summer's...
Didn't Panda and Cheap Thrills also have several weeks on it?
Yes. So basically, to make a long story short, there have only been three number one songs on the Hot 100 all summer. Drake dominated for about, you know, 3 months with One Dance. Then Cheap Thrills showed up in, like, late July, frankly, way too late to accumulate enough points to topple One Dance. And then just last week, this Chainsmokers song, Closer, with Halsey, went to number one. And that looks like it's going to be number one for several weeks now. It's already in its second week at number one. So, like, there's nothing else that stands a chance. Now, if we were having this conversation back in, like, late May, I would have said that the summer was going to look a lot like the summer of 2013. Do you remember summer of 2013?
It was
like
an amazing
battle
summer. It was giving us almost everything constantly. I loved that summer.
Summer 2013 was the battle between two songs, Get Lucky by Daft Punk with Nile Rodgers and Pharrell, and the ultimate winner, which was Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines, the other Pharrell song.
Excuse me, don't act like Demi Lovato didn't exist in 2013.
It did. But I'm talking data. It was a mortal battle between those two songs.
Wait,
and then
Chris,
the Robin Thicke song wound up.
Was Blurred Lines number one? Wasn't it the only song?
It was ridiculous. It was like 12 weeks. It was like forever. It pretty much owned the summer. So, and anyway, it looked like this summer, if we were having this conversation in May, it looked like it was going to be a battle between One Dance and the Justin Timberlake song, which is the song from the movie Trolls that hasn't even come out yet. Can't Stop the Feeling.
You're talking about a photocopy of a photocopy of Pharrell's Happy.
Precisely. Yes, he wanted to get in on some of that sweet, sweet happy action, with complete with the animated kids movie and everything, like Minions becomes Trolls, I guess. No, so the problem was the Justin Timberlake song, which just reeked of we want the song of the summer and we're dropping it in mid-May, we're timing it perfectly. It shot to number one in its very first week. It actually debuted at number one on the Hot 100. It sold piles and piles of copies. And then it fell out of number one the very next week. It literally fell out of number one just before Memorial Day. So, like, this, you know, sort of mano-a-mano battle between Drake and Timberlake was not to be.
Chris, I'm going to have you move off of the data analysis, because in our discussion prior to this, none of us brought up Drake's One Dance, even though I think we all are aware that it was a big hit. But somehow, even if the data says that it was number one for 10 weeks, none of us are feeling it. Explain that. And do you feel the same way as a music listener, not just as someone who's crunching the numbers on this stuff?
I do kind of feel the same way as a music listener. I would say the song was omnipresent, but maybe not ubiquitous. I don't know if those two words actually mean different things. But anyway, what I would attribute that to is the charts work differently now than they worked like 3 years ago, basically because streaming is so much bigger. The main reason why Drake dominated the charts all summer was streaming. Streaming is gradually becoming the Borg that ate everything. Like, to give you an example, the Timberlake song, briefly, the reason it debuted at number one is because, like, you know, 300,000 people, probably, like, you know, tweens and parents, bought the shit out of it in the first week, and it sold a lot of copies. But, like, sales is not really the yardstick by which songs dominate the charts anymore. Now you really have to be a big Spotify hit.
Wow.
And that's what happened with One Dance. One Dance was not necessarily the, I don't know, Jeep bumping song of the summer, but if you were on Apple Music or Spotify, it was just getting streamed and streamed and streamed. Like, I have a friend who works for Spotify, and he's like, yeah, no, the numbers it was pulling were kind of blowing our minds, how people were just, like, it was like a rat clicking for a pellet over and over again, how many times people were playing One Dance on these streaming sites.
Well, I think the thing about the Drake song that makes it feel a little cool to me, like, in a, like, not good way, is that Work with Rihanna and Drake, to me, was such a better song. And I wish they'd almost held that until the summer, but...
Yeah.
I'm glad we got it when we did.
Chris, I have a question for you. What, this is me being a little bit more analytical. What is the impact of now we have three major streaming platforms? If you want to factor in Tidal, you can if you want.
Sure.
But then also the exclusivity aspect, giving exclusives to one platform, having it dominate. Like Frank Ocean apparently is 2 weeks on Apple, and then it's a free-for-all wherever else it ends up. What is that doing to impact streaming and the accessibility of that content?
Yeah, no, you're asking a great question. It's skewing everything. 2016 has been a strange year everywhere. The album chart is also completely weirded out and skewed because of the exclusivity thing, because things that start on one platform and then move to the others, it kind of creates an artificial demand. On the other hand, I mean, to go back to Drake for a minute, like, Drake had an exclusive with Apple Music for a couple of weeks at the beginning, but then it went everywhere, including Spotify, and Spotify was, you know, reporting huge numbers for it as well. So, you know, you can't completely discount that, but it's definitely screwing with our perception of what a hit is. Like, the number one album this week is the Frank Ocean album, but the Frank Ocean album is only available at Apple Music. So, you know, you're kind of limiting the audience to like a subset of the music audience.
Right.
On the other hand, the bar for a hit is so much lower now since, you know, album sales are down and even digital sales of singles are way down. You know, people are not buying their $1.29 singles the way they did 2, 3, 4 years ago. So even if you're exclusive, you can still draw a huge number and top the charts.
One final question, Chris.
Yes.
Which of these songs that we have talked about or Song of the Summer or which songs have made you happiest?
Songs have made me happiest. Made me happiest.
Oh, you're just made of numbers these days. Music has so become your life that you have become disjointed from your own sense of pleasure, Chris.
I have no soul. No, Do you know what song I was clued into actually by the Pop Rocket Facebook thread that wound up in my own summer mix that was great? Have you guys talked about this Zara Larsson song, Lush Life?
Oh, no, we have not.
She had a hit song that was not Lush Life in America. Like, Lush Life was the big hit pretty much everywhere except America. And then over here we had this other song whose name escapes me now, but it was a top 20
Never
hit. And Lush Life is way, way better, and it's really good. And it even mentions summer over and over again. And I totally learned about that from the Pop Rocket thread, actually. That song makes me very happy.
Thank you very much, Chris Malamphy. Your guidance is much appreciated. I think we're closer, but not quite there. Thanks a lot.
I hope I helped a little bit, guys.
Thanks. You did.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Shout out also to Chris's sister, Catherine Malamphy, who is also very active in our Facebook group. So we got the Malamphy
awesome.
Sisters.
I love you both.
Nice.
Can we talk about songs that made us happy on a personal level for the summer? Because I really loved the song by Lizzo, Good as Hell.
Yes.
That one, to me, every time it comes on, I just want to immediately like sashay and be at a bar and have a good drink and see my friends and all of the proper things you're supposed to do in the summer.
Mm. Okay. Let's hear it.
If you need advice, let me simplify. If he don't love you,
I love making you guys do this. I don't know how annoying it is over the course of the summer, but I love making you guys do this.
No, I have one. Wait, hold on, shit. I have one.
Real quick, just one more thing about this, Lizzo. I mean, the vibe of it is straight up early 80s Denise Williams with that piano, early 80s
R&B. That.
Beautiful. Love it.
And it feels so tossed off in like the best way. Her vocals.
Winner. Go in. What are you going to say?
Mine, DJ Khaled released an album of compilation of, it's not necessarily like he's rapping. He did something that Timbaland used to do all the time, which was get artists together. He releases an album that has various artists on it. And then, you know, Diddy does the same thing. So Khaled did the same thing. And I kind of like that somebody is actually taking the opportunity to bring that back, because it's putting rappers and singers together to collab and create something kind of amazing. So one of the songs that I really liked is For Free by DJ Khaled, but that's not the one that I want to pick. The one that I want to pick is Flume and Little Dragon, and it's called Take a Chance. It seems slow, but it picks up. And I know you're already over that. Look at your face.
Am I at the dentist?
Oh.
Ouch.
Ice cold.
I don't, you know what? I might be too old for a summer song.
Never too old for a summer song.
There is nothing, there's...
Okay, here we go. Turn this part up.
You could break up clowns with your fist. This is a quadrant song.
This is very cool.
Yeah, thank
I think it's
you.
A little too glitchy for a summer jam, but it's a good jam.
Yes.
It's a good jam, though.
Yes. But I don't subscribe to the system.
Yeah, I feel like I'm stuck in an episode of Mr. Robot.
Oh.
Wow. He's just really getting back episode, at you for all those
and
comments.
And he's
going to
say all that until
like,
Mindy puts it on in one of her love scenes.
Okay, so what do you guys think are solidifying as like our real contenders here?
Oh, I got to go with the Rihanna Calvin Harris.
Yeah, that's we've nailed it.
All right. Well, you guys, we have to go through a process here. All right.
Can we just explain why? Because I kind
of
really...
No, I'm going to let all of you guys make final arguments. All right. Oliver.
Again, I'm going to go with the Rihanna Calvin Harris, because within like 8 bars of hearing it, I'm like, that's it. That's it right there.
All right. Margaret.
Should I just say a different one to make this more interesting?
Well, that's how our democratic process is supposed to work.
Right. But what happens if we're unanimous?
I know.
I mean, this. I wouldn't normally pick a Rihanna Calvin Harris song just because it feels like just a touch too almost predictable in the same way that Timberlake is predictable.
Yeah.
But I do genuinely like that song.
Yeah. This has been a crazy year, and it's been a really fucked up year. So that the reason I like this song is because it really is simply mindless. There's only 2 lyrics to it. And it does something.
Here's my realization, okay? Mm-hmm. My mind was stuck on this beach song. My mind was stuck, and I am deeply in love with Cake by the Ocean, and I will always love Cake by the Ocean. But listening,
but Chris kind of disqualified
listening
it.
To the song here with you, and no, Chris said
Chris
it was complete.
Chris said it was still in the running,
but listening to this song here with you, I realized
it peaked.
This song,
I hate it.
This is what you came for. Is a pool at night song. It is a like lit pool, sort of like rippling while sexy things go on.
And lots of inflatable pizzas.
Kind of. No, it's not inflatable pizzas. It's just sort of
He's talking about the Calvin Harris.
Yes. It is like stark and blues and grays and light, and it's lovely. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what you came for. Your summer jam, this is what you came for.
Our long strong national choice, nightmare is over.
Colin, get in here.
Just by pure animal.
All right, you guys. This process. Come over here. All right. Like, Colin Anderson. Colin Anderson Colin would scary. Like to make a minority report.
Well, I would argue that the summer jam should be the song that Guy dances most to, and we've got some video of Guy dancing. But the song that Guy danced most to was "Cake by the Ocean."
He is saying that I am being dishonest because I am trying to be respectable and not just stick with the thing I said at the beginning. Yeah. Thereby, ladies and gentlemen, I am amending our previous decision.
Whoa.
It is a tie.
Oh, that's even worse.
Your summer jams.
Wait, because you are one and
three? No. Let's throw it back to the group then.
I moved
to throw it to the group to make the ultimate decision about what. So we do a poll, launch it. The day the show comes out, and two, you got a choice, y'all.
Either
"Cake by the Goddamn Ocean," or you're gonna ooh.
All right, we are handing it. We are handing it to the people. It's the decision.
This is how Trump gets elected. What are you doing?
Margaret, all right, do we agree?
We're gonna have yellow wig by the ocean. What's happening?
Do we agree? We hand it to the people?
Yeah.
Oliver?
I'm with that.
Margaret?
You gotta trust the people.
I don't really approve as a critic who likes to take things in my own hands.
I respect that.
Fine.
Are you going to Kissinger this?
Colin, do you support this? Colin gives us a thumbs up. All right, you guys, this is very fun. I will continue to listen to all of these songs a lot as time goes on. And we will be right back after this to give you some intellectual jams, some jams for your thoughts.
Ooh.
Oh, this is Pop Rocket. That's what you're listening to.
Yeah.
Mugs, shirts, stickers, patches, tanks, and more are yours for the purchasing at MaxFunStore.com. Hey, you already love the podcasts, so why not take this to the next level and outfit your home and bod with our merch? MaxFunStore.com. Because if you have to wear a shirt, it should be one of ours.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. We are giddy, drunk on summer jams.
We really are. I'm sober.
With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell,
Margaret Wappler,
and Oliver Wang.
And every week on Pop Rocket, we tell you our current jams. But since we have been deciding on the jam of this summer, we decided to give you some more intellectual jams and tell you guys about some podcasts that we really enjoy. So, Oliver, what is your pod jam?
I've been getting into the new Dear Prudence podcast, which is from Slate. It is an advice column. I realized, and I admitted this to my students in class today, I really like both reading and listening to advice shows because I'm totally down for emotional rubbernecking.
Yeah.
And the thing about Mallory Ortberg is the new Prue, as they say in the comments section of Dear Prudence.
The recipient of my Tarte du Mérite from the Pop-Tarts this year.
Oh, yes. Wow. I think she's done a very good job. Her writing, in terms of the written column she does, are really witty but insightful. I think she's really knocking it out. I think Slate is sort of getting their sea legs around the quality of the podcast. And partly it's that if you are not a premium subscriber, you get the edited version. So it might be that what I see as sort of the inconsistencies or the unevenness has partially to do with the fact that I'm not actually listening to the full episode, but just the Reader's Digest, the abridged version.
The range within the Slate family of podcasts is fascinating to me because Slate Politics is one of the most, Slate Political Gabfest is so charming and personal and honestly a little bit more aggressive than you'll find in many political podcasts. But some of the others can go, like, some are so personal and accessible and some of them are so highbrow and a little bit removed.
Yeah. I think what they've, at least the last few episodes I've heard, the balance is they don't over-answer a question. And I just started listening to the Dear Sugar podcast, which is another advice podcast. but they will spend what feels like an hour answering one single letter. Mm. And I know a lot of people who are fans of the original Dear Sugar column like that deep dive. But at a certain point, after about 30 minutes, I'm thinking you need to move on to another question because you've already beat this horse to death and you're finding new baseball bats to go at it even more. So we're with Dear Prudence, and again, I think Dan Savage is the king of this. He has the timing down on his answers, mostly good. He kind of over-answers sometimes. But you'll get a good, I don't know, 6-7 questions out of it. And I think Dear Prudence, even the abridged version, she manages to tackle maybe about 3 or 4, and I appreciate that.
Okay, you guys. I'm throwing down with a history podcast.
Okay.
Not just a history podcast. It is a history podcast that goes through British history and evaluates each and every British monarch and then pits them against each other in a reality show style competition. It is called The Rex Factor.
Oh, my God.
And it is thoroughly, thoroughly delightful. It's hosted by two dudes who are history dudes is the best way of describing them. And they make me so mad because they will sort of be like, well, Queen Elizabeth I wasn't out there fighting with the troops herself. And I just want to punch them. And that's kind of what I want from something like that, is to have ideas that I don't necessarily agree with and I can sort of like engage with. And some of them I learn and some of them I'm mad. And it's really, really fun. They are like charmingly dorky personalities, and it's a great way of learning some British history that I didn't know, because what I need in my life is to know more British history. but it's super fun. So check out The Rex Factor if you are a dork of the sort that I am. Margaret Wappler.
I'm just getting into this podcast. I've only listened to like 1 or 2 episodes, so I can't talk at length about it. But when I was in New York, a friend of mine recommended Two Dope Queens, and I got into listening to that on the train and walking around the city. And it's with Phoebe Robinson and Jessica Williams. And it's the two of them chatting and amusing each other and telling stories. And then they also have pretty frequently other comedians come on who will tell their own stories. And the thing that's really nice about Phoebe and Jessica is that they don't feel forced at all. They really do feel compatible and simpatico with each other's points of view. And like the thing that's great about the podcast too is that they'll talk about, you know, everything from like race and gender and things that are going on with them, but in a very like light, fresh, funny way that still has a cut to it. It still has an edge to it, but it doesn't go just totally down like a sour path with it.
Winter, what is your pod jam?
I was going to say 538, but then I realized it's Molly McAleer's Mother May I Sleep With podcast.
Uh-huh.
And basically every episode is her live podcasting a Lifetime movie.
Oh, no. Stop.
Yes.
I am totally listening. I've been listening.
Wanting her to be on the show forever. You too.
Does she have guests?
You... And
can
her.
We all just be in one big bed with
yes.
her?
Molly McAleer writes for Two Broke Girls,
uh-huh.
and she's one of the original founders of Hello Giggles, and she also has another one called Please Advise, a podcast that she has that's really successful, but then she just recently launched this one, and she did one with Jodi Arias, which is one of the best Lifetime movies. I mean, if you're talking about the Pantheon, is it Pantheon or Pantheon?
Pantheon.
Okay. Either way.
Pantheon of Lifetime movies. Jodi Arias just sort of zoomed right up there with Mother May I Sleep With Danger and the Betty Broderick story, A Woman Scorned. So she live podcasts these movies, and she's so drawl and low-key, very sarcastic and sardonic. So it just works perfectly.
Also, just give a shout out to 538. 538 is getting us through this election.
Thank you. By the way, that's what I was going to say. Nate Silver, I just like lean on. He's like the voice of reason in all this nightmarish. But
one of the other things
reality.
I love about that is for a podcast, do either of you listen to it? The 538 podcast.
Yeah.
So it's
sometimes
it's 538.com, the site that, you know, Nate Silver
daily
puts all the numbers together and gives you a real look at what's going to happen. But there's so much surprising life in that podcast because he's charming and by the numbers, but A, having his employees sass back at him constantly, mm-hmm. delightful. Mm-hmm. And like Harry Enten, whiz kid Harry Enten, clearly just wants to be a comedian, but has gotten into, like, he was waylaid by a life of statistics and is now just trying to throw as much personality as he can. And I don't know if he could survive as a comedian, but he does pretty fucking great as a charming statistician.
Maybe this is his audition to get onto Veep.
Also, or, shout out to Keeping It 1600.
Oh, that's...
Jon Favreau, not the director right. and actor, but the White House speechwriter.
That's on the Bill Simmons new network.
Yeah, and Dan Pfeiffer, former advisors to Obama.
I know Bill Simmons is supposed to be great, but I know he's a sports guy, and I just start falling asleep.
I love him!
All right, you guys. I'm too rambunctious, and I apologize. You've been listening...
Oh, wait.
Yes.
One final thing.
Do you have anything else you needed to say, Winter?
I'm doing, this just sprung from a conversation that I had. I'm going to do a Star Wars live tweet starting this Friday until maybe Sunday. We'll see how it goes.
Have you never seen them before?
I've never seen any of them before.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Winter. You're creating a pop culture moment. First, I'm so excited.
First Harry Potter, now Star Wars.
It's just, my boyfriend.
It's the boyfriend.
All the boyfriend.
Wow.
It's all Adam.
We might have to have him come through.
You, oh God, please.
Get him on the phone.
Don't do that. But I've never seen any of the movies. I'm not familiar with the universe.
So
really
what time are you going to start?
I'm going to start. It's on Pop Rocket Facebook group. There's an invite at 7 p.m. on Friday. I'm going to start with the 15-minute Facebook Live event. Don't miss it. Just so you can see my preparation scenario, I'm prepping for like all sorts of, you know, not leaving the house typedom.
Beautiful. Are you going to watch the trilogy or are you going to watch all six?
I'm going to watch all six in machete order per the request from the group.
What is machete order?
I'm still working my way through what that means, but the good news, so that's not the news.
Is it 1 through 6 or 3 through 6?
It's like,
yeah, you don't do the prequels first.
No.
Yeah. In the middle when you're...
That's not the good news, though. The good news is that one of my really good friends gave me, I'll call it a schmorrent, of all of the movies, so I don't have to actually schmy the movies in online.
I bought all of them on iTunes because I believe in American capitalism. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winter Mitchell, Margaret Wafler, and Oliver Wang. I would hilariously ask Winter if she had anything more she needed to say, but she would. I'm sorry.
Oh,
our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Oh, thanks to Housewives Tagline, love you, Susie I, bringing Betty back, and J. Blake Kawhi for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. That is a healthy list. Thank you. If you've got an opinion, we love it if you review us on iTunes. Please give us 5 stars. If you've got an opinion you want to share about this week's topic, you can join in the conversation on our Facebook group and tell us which of the 2 finalists you think should be my summer jam, though Colin has already seen directly into my heart. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producer is the absent Christian Duenas and the puckish Colin Anderson.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.